zu Freund Schermanns Referat, ob ich eine Frage, ob ich wollte Freund Schermann gekannt aufklären, als ein, wenn sie geht zur Hackel in der Date, aber ich meine, die dosige Date hat gerade einen größeren Einfluss auf den Amerikaner jüdischen Leben und das rief sich noch teilweise auf Adayoy. Das ist die Frage wegen der Gründung von People's Relief Committee. Palazzien hat sehr stark richtig ausgenutzt die dosige Bewegung und ist auch ausgegangen auf den amerikanischen Gas, aber People's Relief Committee ist nicht gewähnt die rein palazzinistische Bewegung. Dort ist auch gewähnt zwei Fraktionen, eine Fraktion von Genossisten, oder also die Vorwärtsunhänger, und eine zweite Fraktion von Palazzien. Aber wenn die People's Relief Committee ist gegründet geworden, und auch schon der Joint Guard existiert eine Jahr Zeit. Faktisch, wo es ist vorgekommen, ist auch was gewesen. Bald beim UNED bekommen sie gegründet zwei Gruppen. Eine von der Orthodoxen und eine von der American Jewish Committee. Die von der Orthodoxen hat eine ausgerichtete Losung, wo es hat sich gepasst war, später die Reliefs Committee. Als die Hilfsarbeit von Misericherope darf sein eine Massenbewegung. Als wichtig sind nicht nur die größeren Duves von den Millionären, nur die einzelnen Dollaren. Und das, die Masse, was kein geben, die einzigen Dollaren, können sie gewinnen, dank der jüdischen Presse. Die Losung ist doch herausgerichtet geworden von den Orthodoxen. Mit dem ist nicht Masken gewinnen der American Jewish Committee, wo es hat sich neu gerufen, eine Konferenz von 21, über der Mannsach-Organisation, zu welcher haben geehrt die dosige Menschen, die haben mit einem Jahr später gegründet, den People's Relief Committee. Burich Zuckermann und Levin Epstein und Mayor London und andere haben geehrt zu dem dosigen Komitee, wo sie gegründet geworden durch American Jewish Committee. In die dosige beiden Organisationen, von der Orthodoxen und von der American Jewish Committee, haben gegründet im Joint, die mit einem Jahr später gegründet geworden, der People's Relief Committee, wo es ist gekommen. Und wo es ist geschehen in dem Jahr zwischen? Zu lange sagen, als die jüdische, immigrantische Arbeitermasse hat nicht verstanden die Wichtigkeit von der Hilfsarbeit in dem dosigen Moment. Sie sagen ihnen, was ist mir nicht klar, was ist mir nicht gelungen, aufzuklären. Warum hat man die dosige Initiative auf eine breite Massenaktie auszunutzen, die jüdische Presse übergelost für die jüdische Führer, welche man mit Recht später attackiert? Efter hat ja der Fahrer neu geklärt.
Are there any other questions first for Mr. Sherman?
Or do you want to
take
them all up?
Yes, that's what we usually do. Could you tell us something?
Oh, you're there.
I just wonder if you could tell us something about what happened to Borokhov in America. I don't know how they asked about that. It'll be very interesting.
Die Aufklärung wegen People's Relief ist eine ganz positive. Ich glaube, es habe Tchaikovsky gemacht, der Toys. Die People's Relief hat ein Stück Zeit existiert, jeder sich angeschlossen in dem Joint und hat sich gegründet vor dem Joint. Was ist geschehen, die People's Relief, die Dates habe ich nicht, in dem Moment, ich erinnere sie nicht, aber ich habe sie. Die Gründung von der People's Relief ist gekommen auf der Initiative von Joel Entin, also zusammengerufen eine Konferenz allein und bei der dosigen Konferenz, wie bei jedem 40, hat man beschlossen zu rufen noch eine Konferenz und auf der dosigen Konferenz ist gegründet geworden People's Relief. Aber ich habe nicht gesagt, dass People's Relief ist gewähnt eine Priorizionistische. Ich habe gesagt, dass Priorizierung gespielt eine Rolle in dem, aber nicht, dass es eine Priorizierungistische. Das ist eine Vereinigung von faktisch allen jüdischen Arbeiter- und Volksorganisationen. People's Relief, der Zeit hat sie gegründet, das ist ein bisschen früher für People's Relief, hat sie gegründet die American Jewish War Committee, was ist faktisch gewesen die American Jewish Committee, was ist genau das Hobby gegeben mit Hilfsarbeit. Und dann ist sie gegründet geworden die Central Relief und die orthodoxischen Elemente. Und sie beide haben nach einer kurzer Zeit organisiert dem Joint, zu welchem People's Relief ist Lachatrille nicht zugestanden. People's Relief ist zugestanden zu dem Joint erst in 1915 und von dem nimmt sich der Zitumlenisch, weil People's Relief hat existiert, eher es ist gewähnt, die Joint Distribution Committee. Sie zergründet gleich nachdem es ist gewähnt, die American Jewish Committee von der einen Seite und die Central Committee von der anderen Seite. In dem Kongress Jiddisch, das meinen, der jüdische Arbeit hat noch nicht interessiert mit Relief. Sie haben es zugenommen gleich von Onhieb, aber in der People's Relief ist ständig umgegangen ein Kampf gegen den Minion Joint Distribution Committee. Es ist ein sehr schwerer Kampf. Die politischen Elemente, zum Beispiel die PRC, der jüdische sozialistische Föderation in jeder Zeit, die bundische Elemente sind gewöhnlich gegen Anschluss in Joint Distribution Committee und später Austreten von Joint Distribution Committee. Die Frage ist, so ist die kommen zu schaffen Ausdruck auf dem Zusammenfall 1920, denn die Frage von Arusge von Joint Distribution Committee ist die zentrale Frage herum, welche es jetzt gedreht, der ganze Zusammenfall. Wer es ist gewesen, fahr dem man soll bleiben in dem Joint, und ist allemal gewesen, fahr dem man soll arbeiten in dem Joint, sind gewesen die Vorsteher von der Trade Union Bewegung. Sie sind das gewesen, die, was haben gefordert, als man soll bleiben in dem Joint. Also die Joint ist bei ihm, ist gewesen eine Streitfrage, weil es ist auch nur, noch dem, was auch nur geschleppt ist, die Frage erstens von Zusammenarbeit mit anderen jüdischen Klassen. Und besonders ist eine gewinn scharfe Idee auch in der Form von Relief. Joint Distribution Committee hat allein kein Geld nicht geschaffen. Aber sie ist gewinn die zentrale Körperschaft zur Verteilung Geld. Und sie ist gewinn große Unzufriedenheit. Mit den politischen, sozialistischen Elementen, mit keinem dem Indien, mit keinem dem Efen, wie er sieht, die Dose Geld aus seiner Verteilung geworden. Wir haben gehalten, als die Arbeiterinstitutionen werden gekriegt, als die religiösen Institutionen werden favorisiert und darüber ist umgegangen, um dem ein ganz heftiger Kampf. Wegen Borchows Rolle, wie es aus gewesen in Amerika sehr schwer zu reden. Mir glaube, dass sie gewinnen für das tragischste Kapitel in Borchows Leben. Sie kommen her in der Zeit von der Melchome, wieder anerkennt der Führer von Poerizien und gefunden in der Poerizienbewegung da, wo sie gegangen im Ganzen in Stiere zu seinen Ideen und zu seinen Theories. Wir können nicht sagen, dass er jetzt gefühlt sehr glücklich in der Dose Kersüwe. Von der anderen Seite, aber hat er gesehen, was ich hatte die Aufgaben, wegen welcher ich habe geredet, und er hat geschrieben, wegen dem, was für ihn ist tausendmal wichtiger, die Arbeit, was darf getan werden, wie die Theories, was Daten begründen, die Programme von der Partei. Also erst, wenn er das gleich wäre, so kommen nachher, ist er gewesen in der Opposition. Und ich habe gesagt, dass er ein sozialdemokratischer Verein war, was er ausgeschlossen geworden und er hat sich mit sich solidarisiert, ist er formell geblieben, aber faktisch ist er irgendwann von der ausgeschlossen. Nicht? Aber er ist nur dem zugestanden und gesagt, ihm hat Bewegung, die praktische Aufdes für seinen gestanden von der Bewegung. Aber ich halte ihn, also er hat angeheben, schien dem Prozess von Revidieren, als Sache von seinen Gedanken, weil er hat nicht gehabt, genug Zeit, angeheben dem dosigen Prozess, er hat geprobiert, Vorsitzenden Norden, wie er sei weggefahren, von Amerika gleich nach dem Ausbruch von der Melchome, gleich nach dem Ausbruch von der russischen Revolution. Noch etwas, Borchow hat nicht gewollt sein, kein professionell bei der Bewegung. Es bestanden auf dem, als will sein Chayune hoben von Arbeit, Drößen von der Bewegung. Und er ist darüber geworden, ein Mitarbeiter in Wahrheit. Und natürlich hat er zugenommen, eine Sache von seiner Energie. Von deswegen hat er bewiesen, darauf, laut meiner Meinung, zu schaffen, zwei fundamentale Arbeiten, was können vernehmen, einen Platz, Seite bei Seite mit seinem besten Werk, was er hat geschaffen. Eins ist gewesen, die jüdische Arbeiterbewegung, er hat gewollt, ich denke nicht akkurat den Titel von dem, aber der Gedanke dort ist, was seien die Gravitationszentren von der jüdischen Arbeiterbewegung, wo er hat eingeteilt, Bechlal Arbeit in drei Kategorien, legt sie Ernährung zu der Erde und hat bewiesen, dass jeden gehören zu der dritten Kategorie, was ist zum weitesten von der Erde. Er hat nicht gehalten von der Leschinski-Theorie und der ST-Theorie, jeden können sich nicht proletarisieren. Er hat gehalten, jeden proletarisieren sich je in Goles, aber es sind doch bestimmte Formen von Proletarisation. Das ist gewesen eine wichtige Arbeit sein. Ne? Und eine zweite wichtige Arbeit ist gewesen auf dem Gebiet von Literatur oder Philologie, was hat sich interessiert.
The most meaningful to them and see whether our categories could be drawn out from the context of the activities themselves. It seems to me, for example, that to classify people as being in cultural roles taps an important part of the has special meaning within the context of the movement. And the movement in which the Bund was involved, and that persons who could lend their talents to educational activities, to circle work, and so on. This had special meaning for those people that it might not have for other people in other movements, in other contexts, in other historical contexts. So we're trying to recognize the peculiarity of these things. I think I've taken up more than enough time in this, so I'd like to give Dr. Tobias a chance to respond to the remarks.
But thank you. But before we will do that, Dr. Schuckmann wants
very few words concerning just one or two details. Concerning the stability and continuity of the leadership, I know it is an accepted notion that the Bund leadership was remarkably stable and continuous by comparison with, say, the Russian. But I think that's a myth. And it struck me forcibly, I realized why I've always thought this was a myth without realizing it, when you enumerated the names of the Bund leadership that you had in mind. And if I'm not mistaken, more than half were in the Zagranichny, the Foreign Committee. Now, if you're going to compare the exile intellectual leadership with the Russian exile intellectual leadership, you'll have a very different picture. Plekhanov was a pretty continuous figure, Lenin, Marx, and so on. I would just like to point that out and ask for your comment on my remark. I think Mr. Hertz dealt with Professor Goldhagen's point about the Bund being embattled in its holy period, you know, the early period when there was this sense of a holy brotherhood. I don't think that in that particular period the Bund was embattled by comparison with other movements. Far from it. I would have thought it wasn't isolated. On the contrary, it was less isolated. It was precisely integrated. Also, that notion of the sense of brotherhood and holy brotherhood was recognized by other socialists at the time. You can find this in various Menshevik memoirs. Incidentally, there's an interesting comparison between of the Bund as Bundists as personalities. Of the two younger Martov, Cederbaum brothers, Levitsky and Yezhov, Nowitzki, who was a Bundist at one time, was a semi-Bundist, worked in the Bund, and was very positive about the Bund, talks of this sense of holiness and an uplifted, exalted approach to life. At the same time, you can sense there's a characteristic of sort of Jesuitical devotion, I mean, the enclosed devotion, which comes out in Yezhov's memoirs in the negative sense. He says that the horizon was a very limited one, that they only saw the sort of day-to-day tasks, which you can in some sense see as the other side of the medal of a brotherhood. Yes, then just one other question. Would you agree that the way in which Mr. Hertz uses the expression worker when talking of the members of the Central Committee, saying that there was only one intellectual or two intellectuals, a worker, would you accept that the term worker, since you're interested in the sociological approach and categories, would you accept that as a category? Because I wouldn't. I would say that the minute he's entered the organization professionally, he ceased to be a worker, and that you have to find some other category. And how intelligent, after all, is a thing they found precisely for that level. And I think it clears the air. Worker, I think, is a false category there. I had a point that I wanted to make about the Buddhists, but I think it was a crack and I've forgotten it, so I'll leave it there.
Is Professor Tobias with Antwerpen of the...
As we more or less expected, the major difficulties are about the use of categories and the use of terminology. And of course, as I tried to indicate four or five times in the paper, and as Professor Woodhouse has again reiterated in his remarks, we're only at the beginning, in a sense, and therefore the notion of which categories we used can be argued with. We argued about it ourselves, and no doubt we will continue to argue about it as we go on. Also, I would like to point out that in the space of half an hour, if I tried to refine definitions, for instance, with reference to Professor Astor's remark, if I tried to refine education in the Russian Empire in all its degrees, in terms of Yiddish and in terms of Russian, the whole paper would have been concerned simply with that. All right, that's no defense, really, but simply an explanation. As far as Professor Shukman is concerned, I don't see, although one can make a case, I think, that there is a difference, I would agree with this, between being in the Central Committee and being in the Foreign Committee of the Bund. I don't think that when we say that someone left Russia and went into the Foreign Committee of the Bund, that this cut him out of the leadership, not by any manner of means. The Foreign Committee of the Bund was a fairly significant, a very significant organization.
Oh yes, if I may just interrupt, my yes. point there was obviously ambiguous. I simply meant that they were not exposed to arrest.
They were not exposed
That's
to arrest, no.
That's
oh yes. Well, this deals with a kind of generalization, a kind of characterization that we have only begun to deal with, and that is that Bund leadership, in a sense, was of a very interesting type. It might be called a leadership pool, in which leaders came and went for various reasons. They left because they had to protect themselves from the police. They were arrested. This happened constantly. We are certainly aware of this, but it's very interesting that as soon as many of them come back, they're right back in positions of top leadership. So that if there was continuity within in every period that we mentioned, then we call them, for purposes of this rather gross analysis, we call them continual leaders. I think in that sense we should understand it. As far as the way that Mr. Hertz used the word worker, well, luckily we were dealing with leadership. If you start dealing with the other end of the scale, you run into the same problem. What is a worker? What is a half intellectual? As you know, as well as I, maybe better, the communists themselves go to great pains to distinguish the proletariat from the artisans. And you can go on and on in this way in trying to define who you're talking about, and probably we should. We can't do it tonight, and I'm not certain exactly about what Sholem Hertz meant when he used the word worker. He may have meant a worker in a formal sense in a factory or a worker in the organization, and I'm not certain which, so I won't carry that any further. I think Professor Woodhouse has said enough on why this method, as compared to other more traditional historical methods. I myself am connected with a history department rather than a sociology department. I can only say that I don't think there's any magic in sociology. I don't think the sociologists do anything that the historian doesn't do in a sense. But the historian perhaps does it in a much rougher, in a much cruder way, in a much more vague, an impressionistic way than does the sociologist. The greater exactness, even if it sometimes means distortion, I certainly will recognize that it sometimes means distortion to the historian, it still, I think, adds something that we don't get in history ordinarily. We don't quantify, we rarely do. How many people had thought about how many members of the Central Committee there were between 1897 and 1917 about their character? How many people thought? Well, how many people there were in foreign committees, in the foreign committee of the Bund? I don't know at this point, except that it must have been fairly close to the numbers in the Central Committee, because John Mill tells us in his memoirs that most of the people in the Central Committee at one time or another were also in the Foreign Committee. There's a tremendous overlap. But until we start to do some counting and to ask ourselves, how many were there? Who were they? What were they like? We're still dealing with sense impressions. Now, it may be, as Professor Woodhouse said, that once you've counted them, you'll find out that you come out with pretty much the same thing that you knew in the first place, but you know, and that's different. This kind of analysis, I should say, has its counterpart, even though this is saying it in a rough way, in the physical sciences. You have a theory, you quantify it, you apply a mathematics to it, and you have some. Well, all right, that's enough on that, I think. As far as Mr. Goldhagen goes, and the question of asking for comparisons, I'm all for it, I believe he think it, he knows. And the question of comparison, I think, can't come until you have established some kinds of information which you want to compare. Therefore, all I can say is that we are trying to take the first step toward establishing knowledge about one organization, and then let others, or whoever it may be, establish information about others, and then you'll have your basis for a comparison. Also addressed to Professor Goldhagen, about the schisms, why no schisms in the Bund, that it had enemies on all sides. Of course it did. But this is not a very unusual phenomenon in the Russian revolutionary movement. Everybody had enemies on all sides. And certainly the Bolsheviks felt that they had the greatest enemies on all their sides. And what was their experience as compared with the Bund? That, I think, would be an interesting thing to explore. As far as the categories that you used, Professor Goldhagen, I don't think ours were really so very far from what you indicated. We're probably could get together on that very simply. I think I already talked to Professor Oster's point, which is of course well taken, but all I can do is say that with time we will define more closely, and this may produce some changings in what we said this evening. Thank you.
Als we vragen, we treden zoet zu dem zweiten Teil van onze heutige Sitzige Sitzung. Dat is, also ik zou zeggen, freie Diskussie, dat ze me zegt, in gewisse organisaties, dat is zum Wohl und Best, in zo'n geval. En ik wil bald geben das Wort Dr. Weinreich. Ik wil aber, ik heb sie ermahnt, als da seinen Referenten von vermittelter Sitzung, was haben nicht gehabt, die Gelegenheit zu entfernen, verschiedene Fragen, was mir hat gestellt, da seinen Professor Frenkel und Mr. Ezra Mendelssohn, ihr seid fast, you are most welcome to take floor, because I suppose that there are quite a few questions addressed to you. Dr. Weinreich, bitte.
I didn't think there was anything terribly serious. As far as Mr. Mishkinsky's point on the relationship of the opposition in Vilna and that in Bialystok some years later, I think that's quite a good criticism. The reason I feel justified in making the comparison is that I found enough elements in common to both oppositions that I felt that this was a justified procedure. It's true that the possible ramifications of the two opposition movements were somewhat different. That goes also for the Grodno group, about which very little is known, except that apparently it did become affiliated with PPS, which used Grodno as a kind of a beachhead for making propaganda in Lithuania. Mr. Hertz very briefly mentioned the national ramifications of the opposition in Minsk, but this I ignored because I wasn't interested so much in the ideology of the opposition as I was in other aspects. This was, of course, Lessons opposition in Minsk. As far as Gordon goes, I was very glad to hear both Professor Goldtag and Dr. Weinreich went into some detail on Gordon's importance, Professor Goldtag, and especially on the idea of his anti-intellectual doctrine, which was taken up, which he evolved apparently by himself without reading either Michalski or some others. I would also like to say that Gordon is important for what he had to say about the Jewish labor movement, especially in his attacks on the idea that the Jewish working class could be absolutely compared to a industrialized working class in the Western European sense of the word. He felt that the Jewish artisans would not lend themselves to the type of Marxist workers' party which the Bund was, well, not yet the Bund, but which the intellectual leadership was planning to found. And I think he hit upon a rather important point here, which has not been too much discussed, which the Bund itself had some difficulty with later, and which I think might be considered one of the important points in Gordon's position, which has hitherto been neglected. As far as Dr. Weinreich's statement, I think he raised a very interesting point about the question over terror, that not all workers were terrorists and not all intellectuals were anti-terrorists. I quite agree. I don't think you can make an absolute division between all workers were on one side and all intellectuals were on the other. We know of intellectuals, after all, who associate themselves with worker movements, and I think it's quite correct to say one can't be too mechanical about this. I simply adopted the two as an antithesis, but I think it's quite right to point out that some of the worker opposition movements were also participated in by intellectuals and vice versa. I think that touches all the points, so much for that. Thank you.
Dr. Frenkel.
Professor Goldhagen raised some fundamental points this morning. I don't think they were really meant as excluding what I said, but simply as suggesting alternative approaches, and therefore I don't really feel any need to answer. It's perfectly true that a rounded historical study obviously has to, as it were, unmask historical figures if it's to be complete. I didn't really attempt this. It wasn't a psychological study. I think it's also true, your grant, that first of all one has to consider what people say, why people say that what they do, I mean politically, not psychologically, and also why they gain attraction in some periods and not in others, and that this is perhaps the beginning. That's all. This paper's only half an hour, and I couldn't deal with everything. I would have thought the psychological approach comes fairly late when I was considering political movements. I mean, the fact that Borokhov or Sirkin were motivated by all sorts of hidden motives, which they probably themselves weren't aware of, is important and is necessary, but I don't think one can start with that. Anyway, that's my opinion. Professor Astor raised points of detail. Some of them I certainly wouldn't argue with. It's true that Vyrozhdeniye was a polemical statement of the opposition party, and that the SS themselves never used it. On the other hand, it doesn't seem to me that it was such a terrible distortion of what they were in fact saying. They were saying that the position of the Jewish working class and of the Jewish people was declining either relatively or absolutely economically, and that from this decline, relative or absolute, depending on who was talking, certain results, positive results, would follow, which was in fact, the antithesis of a Vyrozhdeniye approach. Leszczynski's role, of course, Leszczynski wasn't the only leader of the SS. I'm not sure, on this point I really wouldn't make any definite statement, but I'm not sure that he didn't formulate the fundamental socio-economic ideas of the SS more fully than other leaders of those years, 1905 to 1908. But on that I'm not sure.
Well, in 1906 he completely left the leadership of the party.
Yes.
The great, I would say, cynically shouted out ignoramus and went out of the Congress, and he never returned before 1917.
Yes, but the fact remains that his book, his pamphlet,
it was not the only one.
Well, I'm not sure that anybody else formulated the ideas of the party more fully in any book of that period.
Well,
socioeconomic ideas.
I gave you something from memoirs of an ancient leader of SS, I happen to be my father, by the way. So he wrote that our party had no fortune with formulation of our theory. Our reality was much ahead of our theory. Our theory always trained behind. And we never simply could adequately formulate our theory. So I believe that from a certain point of view, from a philosophical point of view, Lapsky or Litvakov were very much ahead of Leszczynski, was no more than a statistician. And as I mentioned, even this idea itself of non-proletarization was not his invention.
I never said it was. I never said that it was his invention.
No, but you always mentioned the theory.
The Angola point of 1912, I grant. The SS did take part in that, but the basic point I made, that the idea of class war, as formulated in the territorialist policy in 1905 to 1907, the only meaning that I can find in that was that the SS were going to be critics of the bourgeois territorialists. Insofar as the bourgeois territorialist organization was the Jewish territorial organization, I think it's perfectly justified to say that they saw themselves in terms of opposition. The fact they didn't belong to the movement is neither here nor there. They saw themselves as opponents of that organization. As for the Vyrozhdeniye not being anti-Sirkin, this simply isn't my reading of the sources, both archival, and I've gone through Sirkin's the letters he received in 1904 in the archives in Tel Aviv. And there it's perfectly clear that he was receiving letters from the editors of Vyrozhdeniye, which were perfectly identifying themselves with Sirkin. It's perfectly true that on certain points, as I said, they didn't accept Sirkin's idea of two parties, but they accepted his idea that you had to combine
both revolution and territorialism. And insofar as Sirkin had been the first person to make that statement, they identified themselves with Sirkin and they wanted Sirkin to join their party. This has been published in Reuter Pincus number 2, and it's also in unpublished material in the Tel Aviv archive. As for the Vajradinia being Marxists, well, this of course brings one to the, a fundamental approach to Russian Marxism. What was Russian Marxism? In a certain sense, in my opinion, you can more or less say that all the leaders of Russian revolutionary politics, or nearly all of them, from the mid-1890s were in a certain sense Marxists. I don't know, it was true of Shidlovsky and of Chernov. They all had a great respect for Marx. They all said that he was a great man, and possibly the greatest socialist of the 19th century. In that sense, they were all Marxists. In another sense, some of them were Marxists and some of them weren't. In that sense, the division seems to me falls around the personality of Plekhanov. Plekhanov, after all, formulated Russian Marxism. He gave his stamp to the Russian Marxist movement, and he associated it with certain ideas. That is, that Russia had to go through at least some kind of bourgeois revolution, through some stage of capitalism, and a certain kind of determinist philosophy. These were the hallmarks of his philosophy. This became the hallmarks of Russian Marxism in the normal sense of the word. Insofar as Shidlovsky was an anti-Marxist, and everybody considered him an anti-Marxist, it was insofar he was anti-Plekhanov. And in this sense, Vajradinia wasn't a Marxist movement. In any other sense, practically all the socialists in Russia were Marxists. Okay, that's all.
It's well better to have a wine, right?
Ich bin nicht im Ganzen sicher, dass ich will sein Bekehr herauszubringen, das, was ich will sagen, weil wollen wollte ich proben, summieren, das, was ist vorgekommen, die drei Tage.